First case for argument, United States v. Rushton. Mr. Smith.
Please the court, counsel. My name is Lee Smith. I represent the defendant, Grant Rushton. We are here on appeal of Mr. Rushton's sentence. He was sentenced to 96 months imprisonment. There is, I believe, an agreement, the government agrees that there was an error made in calculating the sentencing guideline range. Mr. Rushton pleaded guilty to mail fraud and money laundering as a result of an investment scheme, and was given two enhancements as a result of his conduct. One was for operate as a commodity pool operator, and that added four levels to the conduct. And he was also given an additional two levels for abuse of position of trust. The comments to the guidelines indicate that both of these enhancements cannot be given in the same case. And so there should be a lowering of two levels from the sentencing guideline. It would result in a reduction of his range from the 78 to 97 months that was found in the district court to 63 to 78 months.
But shouldn't his guidelines sentence have been computed using the money laundering guideline?
They should have been. I thought they were, but they
were. I don't think so.
That was an error that the government did not point out at the time of the...
Well, if the case went back for resentencing, would it be possible for the judge to consider the money laundering guideline?
Again, that gets to the real crux of this case, and that's whether there has been a waiver of that or whether the sentencing or the enhancement the government should be allowed to...
Well, I'm just curious, case goes back for resentencing, can the judge or should the judge correct any errors he's made?
Well, in terms of there is a line of authority from this court that when a case is remanded for resentencing, if the government has chosen not to seek a particular enhancement, that it cannot do so on remand.
Now, there's also a line of authority to the contrary. And you're here on a plain error argument, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Which makes it kind of tough for it's tough for a defendant arguing plain error to argue that the government has waived something else, right?
Yeah.
Unless it was quite explicit.
Well, I think the error here, again, it's about as plain as I think an error could be in terms of interpreting the guidelines in terms of you can't get both enhancements. There really is no dispute that it was error. Now, what did affect the defendant's substantial rights? Again, it changed the guideline range pretty substantially. So we think
but the judge was starting with the wrong base offense level.
Well, that may be, and if it comes back again, I think our position will be on resentencing that that was a choice that was made by the government
A choice or just an oversight?
It may have, I don't know. I was not there.
The case is full of oversights, right? By everybody.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
And I'm sorry I didn't interrupt you.
No, that's correct.
And I think if the case goes back, will the government seek a guidelines range that is proper? Again, I think our position is going to be on remand that they are, in effect, other than correcting the obvious error there, the error being in the commodity pool operator, that they cannot seek a greater sentence than we'd be permitted by correction of the error. They not seek a guideline range other than what would be corrected by the error. So
in terms of the logic of the of the plain error review, where we have to worry about substantial rights of the defendant, why isn't it fair to allow, in essence, both sides to correct errors in determining whether the substantial rights of the defendant were violated?
I think there is
an argument. As opposed to just sort of the gamesmanship, well, we lucked out because the government didn't make this other argument.
I think there is an argument to be made to go back. I mean, when there, if the sentencing was riddled with numerous errors, and you may perhaps make an argument that that's the case here, that perhaps you do go back in terms of fairness and start over with the sentencing process, sentencing guidelines calculation. So, if that's the court's determination, our view is that it isn't so riddled with error that we reached that point. But I can certainly understand how an argument could be made to that. But in terms of the government's position has been, well, we don't even need to send this back for resentencing because we can make the correction here. I don't think the record supports that at all. And we have, if their argument is that there should be adjustment or enhancement for a vulnerable victim, the record was not developed on that at all at the district court level, and certainly not to the extent where it would be permitted for this court to make that adjustment.
And why is that?
Well, there was never any notice given to the defendant that the government was going to seek that enhancement. You have on the pre-sentence report some references to an elderly woman who was...
Some references.
Well, there were references that an 85-year-old...
Is there a doubt about her age?
No doubt about her age. I mean,
what do you mean, some references?
Well, there's also a...
She's very old.
Very old.
Otherwise, why doesn't that make her a vulnerable victim?
Why does it not make her a vulnerable victim? Our position would be, from the pre-sentence report that we have right now, and absent any other information, what we can see there is the pre-sentence report lists the victim as the trust, the Doris Dunn trust, not Doris Dunn. We can't tell. I can't tell from that report.
Well, wait a second. She's the beneficiary of the trust, right?
Presumably.
All right, so she's the one who's hurt. So, and she is vulnerable.
But one of the requirements in order to the vulnerable victim enhancement to apply is that the defendant have basically targeted someone because of their vulnerability. There's nothing in this.
I don't understand that. He knows that he's taking money from her trust.
I can't tell that from
What do you mean you can't tell? He doesn't know? He doesn't know that the trust for this woman is one of his victims?
There was also...
Now answer my question.
I'm saying
does he know that the trust is a victim?
I cannot tell from this pre-sentence report because the...
I don't understand. He doesn't know who he's doing business with?
He knows he's doing business with the son of this woman, who is also a victim.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He knows he's dealing with this trust for this woman, doesn't he?
But he may not. I mean, I can't
what
tell.
What do you mean he may not? He just said he did.
I'm saying that the...
Doesn't he know who his customer, who his, victims are?
Let me give you
Does he know or not who his victims are?
I cannot tell from this pre-sentence report. I mean, he may have dealt with the son, who may have been the trustee, for all we know from this pre-sentence report. I mean, there was...
So he didn't know this aged woman was a beneficiary of someone Did he know that she was in the picture at all?
From the pre-sentence report, one cannot tell. That record was never developed. I mean, that could have been, perhaps it could have been developed there, but one cannot tell from this pre-sentence report who he dealt with, whether he dealt with a son. He obviously did deal with a son because the son is also listed as a victim of about...
So you're saying he dealt with the son, he knew about the son, but he didn't know that the mother was involved? Is that what you're saying?
I cannot tell from the pre-sentence, from the basis of the pre-sentence report. Again,
I thought the argument was that if he was dealing with the trustee, whoever that might have been,
right,
the trustee wasn't vulnerable. He wasn't taking advantage of the gullibility or suggestibility of the trustee.
That's correct. I mean, if he dealt with the son, if the son is
Well, it's a question what is meant by vulnerable victim. Is it someone simply who is easily defrauded, or does it mean someone who is going to be hurt more than other people because of age or financial necessity or what have you?
I believe it to be the latter, which is because of their circumstances, whether that's age or handicap.
Excuse me, what?
I believe it's the latter, as you were suggesting.
The latter, yeah.
Because of its age or handicap or something that creates a vulnerability. Let me reserve.
Well, then why? What's the relevance of the son?
Well, the son did not have that vulnerability.
No, but she's the one who suffers from this, right?
Correct.
And isn't she vulnerable? Because
I would not dispute that she is vulnerable. What I dispute is whether that vulnerability was known, whether in dealing with, in Mr. Rushen's dealing with the son, who is not vulnerable, whether he in fact knew the vulnerability.
What did he think? He didn't know the son was a trustee?
I cannot tell from the mere fact of the
I thought the account statements were sent to the mother and that the defendant was introduced to the mother at some point along the way.
Whether he was introduced to the mother, again, I didn't see that in the pre-sentence report, but I thought that his dealings were with, or again, the pre-sentence report simply lists the trustee or the trust as the victim.
But as far as the facts of the case are concerned, I thought the fact pattern included an introduction by the son, who's the defendant's landlord, to his mother for investment purposes, and the statements were sent to her.
I didn't think it was that clear that the statements were sent to the mother directly, but I thought that it was that needed to be developed if the vulnerable victim enhancement is to apply, because I didn't see it as clear as apparently Your Honor did.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Hartzler?
Good morning. Joe Hartzler on behalf of the United States. I think the record is very clear that he met the mother. Paragraph 50 in the pre-sentence report refers to her statement that it was his way of words that persuaded her to invest nearly $200,000 with him. So I don't think there's really any question that he knew that she was an elderly woman. And, of course, we all concur that she was vulnerable. The issue that I see, there are two issues. First of all, is whether or not this court can resolve this by exercising its discretion, concluding that the guidelines would be essentially the same despite the oversights, and so there's no reason to send it back. Or alternatively, if it goes back, I hope that there'll be some direction from the court to indicate that it is now open for all corrections to be made. You all have acknowledged that there were a number of oversights. Judge Posner, I'm not sure why the money laundering guidelines weren't calculated, but my guess is that that four-level increase under the 2B section puts that guideline range higher than it would have been had they calculated under the, I think 2S is the money laundering. I believe there's a two-level boost for money laundering over fraud, but the commodity pool operation, the four-level boost, I think does not apply under 2S. But I didn't bring my guideline book with me, and I didn't analyze that, so it's worth looking into.
Mm-hmm.
But the other factor, though, that you ought to consider is if that's the case, if the four-level increase applies only under 2B, under the fraud section, and there is a two-level increase by applying money laundering, you would also get the abuse of trust. The two-level increase. So it would be the same if the abuse of trust, as we know, doesn't apply under the 2B fraud guideline. You follow the math here? That
2 + 2, I got it.
Okay. It would come out to be the same. So there are a couple of scenarios in which you can consider this and conclude that the defendant's substantial rights simply weren't violated, and even if there is some issue of procedural error, that this court can exercise its discretion and conclude that this was a reasonable sentence and the procedural error was not all that significant in view of.
Mr. Hartzler, if we do a so-called clean slate remand, basically says start over, would the government be able to seek and would the district court be able to impose a higher sentence than was imposed the first time around?
I think so. I'm trying to recall the cases where that has occurred. I mean, you probably know that that's highly unusual for that to happen.
I know it's unusual. I'm not sure.
Theoretically, could it happen? I think it could happen. And believe it or not, I recall being in another case here where defense counsel was asked that very question from the panel, that you realize that you're taking a risk by arguing this sentencing. I'm only hesitating because I've not addressed that issue, and I can't immediately come to mind of what the cases are that say that's legitimate. But I don't know.
I probably should know, but I'm not sure. So.
I don't think there obviously would be any double jeopardy. The argument, I suppose, would be that it infringes a defendant's right to appeal somehow, that you've restricted. But I don't see that that's a winning argument. So my guess is the answer to your question is very likely yes, though that's with a tinge of uncertainty. But I also add that I think it's also very unlikely that there would be any reason to impose a higher sentence, since the judge found this sentence to be sufficient but not greater than necessary. It would be unusual, I think, for the judge to reverse that and say, you know, I've thought some more about this, and I think this really ought to be a higher sentence at this point.
You know, I lost the thread of what you were saying earlier about the difference between... Are you saying that sentencing under the... or calculation of his guideline range under the money laundering provision wouldn't affect his sentence? Affect his sentence?
I think it would come out to be the same. I think if you use 2S, am I right on the money laundering section? Is that 2S?
I don't know.
Yes. Okay.
Judge Sykes is nodding yes. I think that if you do the money laundering calculation, it comes out, money laundering used to be always two levels higher than the 2B calculation of fraud. In addition, you would get the Chapter 3 abuse of trust increase. That would apply. Abuse of trust does not apply only because the commodity pool operator four-level increase applied under 2B. So we're conceding. When we applied 2B, got a four-level increase for the commodity pool operator, then you can't apply the two-level increase for the abuse of trust. But if you're under Chapter 2S, I don't think there's a commodity pool specific offense enhancement, I don't believe. So you get the two levels under 2S because it's a higher level than 2B, plus the two levels for abuse of trust. And my guess is, not having done the calculation, it comes out...
It's four levels either way.
That's right. That's four levels. And then the key is, if it went back and we were able to do anything else, and we went under 2S and added the vulnerable victim, it would actually be a total of a six-level increase from whatever the base offense level is.
Oh, so vulnerable victim... Is this for the money laundering? Would be...
Vulnerable victim is a Chapter 3. It's not a Chapter 2.
Not... Well, wait. You have to... Don't use the numbers.
Oh, good.
So the vulnerable victim is permitted for which type of offense?
Any. The Chapter 2 of the guidelines are essentially the base offense level for a particular offense and the specific offense characteristics. So Chapter 2 only relates to the conduct relating to the offense. The Chapter 3 enhancements would apply to any Chapter 2 offense. So abuse.
Wait a second. You're losing me with the chapters. So we have the simple fraud, and but the simple fraud gets an enhancement for a commodity pool operation?
Correct.
And that's how you get to four levels?
That's why you add four levels, yes.
Why you add four, and you get six levels for...
No. You get six levels if you add the vulnerable victim on top of that.
Wait a second. If he's sued for fraud, and he's got the commodity pool operation bonus, how many levels is that? Is that four also? Is that four?
Four.
And then he could get, he couldn't get abuse of trust, but he could get vulnerable victim on top of that?
That's correct.
So he could get six under that route?
Yes.
And you're saying with the money laundering, it would be two plus two for abuse of trust, and then two more for vulnerable victims. So it would be six either way. Is that what you're suggesting?
If I'm correct about the money laundering being two levels higher, I mean, I'm going to be here for two more.
You're correct. It is.
Okay.
It's 2S1.1.
Okay.
B2.
It's typically two levels higher than the 2B. I'm sorry to use the chapters again, but yes. Yes, that's correct. It would be six either way.
Okay. So now where do we stand with a vulnerable victim? Are you arguing that, because for what you said at the very beginning of your argument suggested that you think it's perfectly clear she was a victim, that she made a decision about the investment of the money after meeting him?
Correct.
So does that mean that we should do what then? If we're persuaded by you that the vulnerable victim enhancement would be proper, what do we do?
Exercise your discretion to affirm the sentence.
And is that a sentence with the six levels? Is that what would be affirming?
Well, yes. The way you and I are analyzing it, it's six levels after the. Yes,
right.
It's an additional six levels on top of the base offense level and the increase for the amount of money. That's correct.
Right. Now, let me just ask you one more question. I'm puzzled. What is the significant? Well, I don't even know what a commodity pool operator is, but what is the significant? Why does that make it a worse crime?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I assume that it's probably they add the four levels, I'm guessing, because they want to deter people from engaging in conduct that is already risky and want to make sure that it's done in a way that's transparent and they don't defraud the victims. I think that it's probably because there's so much risk inherent in the nature of the conduct. And obviously, when you're pooling people's money, which is by definition, the commodity pool operator is taking
right,
a
so
number
it's
of
hard
investors.
To,
in.
Yeah.
There's always that possibility of it becoming a Ponzi scheme. So my guess is that they want to, this sentencing commission, recognizes the potential risk involved and want to do something to deter commodity pool operators from doing foolish criminal things. But that's only a guess. I didn't look at the amendment to the guidelines.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Smith, your time had expired. We'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Governor. As far as your last question, Judge Posner, the commodity pool operator enhancement, I don't know the exact history why that was created. It's a fairly recent one within the last 10 years, I think, that it was put into the guidelines. But whatever the intent was, I think it's probably this is a pretty small case for that to apply. I mean, there are the number of victims here, the amount's well over $1 million that was defrauded here. But the number of victims is probably no more than about 15. It probably overstates what is necessary here. As Judge Hamilton, to your question, I would whether he could be sentenced to a longer sentence after remand. If I recall the case, Blackledge versus North Carolina, I think as far as chilling the right to appeal, I don't believe he could be sentenced to a longer.
Unless it's vindictive, right?
Unless it's vindictive,
Why would it be vindictive? The judge was just correcting a mistake he'd made.
I think it would be. I think that would be the government's burden to prove that it was not vindictive. Usually, that can be if it is done. It's done by showing there are new facts that have come up. If the same facts,
just made a mistake. Why do people make mistakes without being vindictive?
Well, the guidelines. Calculation, I think, if it is to be redone properly, and I think all the questions that the court has had suggest why this needs to be remanded. There was a lot to sort out in terms of the various enhancements and whether in the calculation.
What about Mr. Hartzler said that he met the mother and she wanted to invest with him. Is that true?
I think he did meet the mother. Whether, and again, I don't have the recall on the pre-sentence report whether I didn't, again, I don't recall that there was an actual conversation that she wanted to invest or whether that was through the son. That's not clear to me in reading the pre-sentence report. And again, that's why it needs to be remanded so those kind of, so it can be given notice and those facts hashed out.
So your basis for wanting a remand is for further inquiry into the vulnerable victim enhancement, is that correct?
Well, my basis for our appeal was that the commodity pool operator enhancement should not be combined
with the vulnerable victim.
Vulnerable victim was never an issue, never brought up at the district court level. So that was phrased for the first time on appeal.
Now your concern is with the abuse of trust.
The
guidelines just clearly say don't do this with the commodity pool adjustment. So.
Correct. Okay. That's right.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And were you appointed, Mr. Smith? Okay. Okay. All right. Well,
nobody needs to move.
So. Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, we.